Mark 1:21-28. They went to Capernaum, and when the Sabbath came, Jesus went into the synagogue and began to teach. The people were amazed at his teaching, because he taught them as one who had authority, not as the teachers of the law. Just then a man in their synagogue who was possessed by an impure spirit cried out, "What do you want with us, Jesus of Nazareth? Have you come to destroy us? I know who you are, the Holy One of God." "Be quiet," Jesus said sternly. "Come out of him." And the impure spirit shook the man violently and came out of him with a shriek. The people were all so amazed, and they asked each other, "What is this? A new teaching with authority? He even gives orders to impure spirits, and they obey him." News about him spread quickly over the whole region of Galilee. As soon as he had left the synagogue, they went to James and John, to the home of Simon and Andrew. And Simon's mother-in-law was in bed with fever, and they immediately told Jesus about her. So he went to her, and he took her hand and helped her up, and the fever left her, and she began to wait on them. The evening after the sunset, the people brought to Jesus all the sick and the demon-possessed, and the whole town gathered at the door, and Jesus healed them who had various diseases. He also drove out many demons, but he would not let the demons speak, because they knew who he was. It is not necessarily my most favorite subject when I talk about demons and unclean spirits, but nevertheless, as you take a book of the Bible and you work your way through it, you have to deal with what comes up along the way. And so I'm going to give a short review, because it's been Easter, it's been a couple weeks since we've been back into Mark. And Mark starts out with a phrase about the gospel. It is the beginning of the gospel of Jesus Christ, the Son of God. John baptized for the forgiveness of sins and prepared Jesus' coming along the way. And Jesus was to baptize with the Holy Spirit. Jesus was baptized by John the Baptist, and the heavens is said to have torn open. And the Spirit descended upon Jesus with a voice that said, "You are my Son." The Spirit immediately sent him into the desert. Here, the desert, I think, can either be understood as a spiritually dead place or an actual desert. And there he was tempted by Satan and the wild animals. Or what I neglected to say in the previous messages, the wild animals, I think sometimes were actually evil spirits that went into animals that talked. We'll move into that a little bit. It doesn't really say that, but if you look there is an example in Numbers 22 where a donkey talked. And so there is the idea that spirits can possess animals and they can speak. So this is kind of my idea. It's not really written into the text, but nevertheless, I think wild animals was put in there rather than spirits or demons. That's just my idea. But he was also ministered to by the angels, and he was attended to. And then he started with naming his disciples. And the question, the message that I had was, did they know? And the idea was that some of the disciples have foreknowledge and understanding that they, at some time in their life, that they were chosen as a predestination and knew that something was going to happen in their lives because they simply dropped their nets and left. So the idea in that message was that, yes, predestined and God's elect does happen. It's not always for everybody. It's not a whole systematic one only thing. God does pick and choose throughout life various different peoples to do various different jobs. Yes, we are all important, but some are God's elect and some are predestined. And what I always say is, if you think you're God's elect and God's predestined, is you better make sure that you're doing what God has predestined you for. And most people who in the Bible who were God's elect did not have a normal good life. So be careful when you say that you are God's elect. Even though God loves you where you are and understands you, I'm not saying that that doesn't happen. Now to today's reading. The title was, They Knew. And I got the title from the very end of the passage that I read, is that the demons actually knew who Jesus was. They may, a lot of us humans, the humans at the time, and even us today, we don't understand who Jesus was. But they do. At the very beginning, in the passage, it talks about how Jesus taught differently. Now, I understand a little bit about teaching. I know a little. I'm not a professional teacher, but I have taught in an adult class, and I have a little bit of knowledge, enough to make me dangerous. But nevertheless, I think there's a difference between simply repeating what you're taught through memorization and actually understanding what you're teaching. There is a difference between that two, them two things. And the way I see that Jesus taught was, he understood what he was teaching and preaching. He had a deep understanding. He could and out of that wellness of his understanding from the heart and from the spirit, he could teach and preach. Where the teachers of the law simply were taught what to say in response to every question. That still happens today. There's a book floating around that the evangelicals put out that will answer every question that you are given, with no understanding, of course. But this is, if you're asked this question, you should respond this way. So that is, to me, is the difference in teaching. You understand the material, and you speak out of that, or you memorize it along the way. And so Jesus taught with authority and understanding, and they were just taken back by it. I don't necessarily like talking about evil spirits, demons, and what have you. It's not my favorite subject. Although I think it is real, it happens. You can read various different accounts of it, whether you believe the stories or not. Probably the one movie that, what was that movie? The first one that came out?
Exorcist.
Everyone probably remembers that, where pea soup flew everywhere and all that kind of stuff. There are variations of possessions. There are real accounts of various different of actual possessions. I don't laugh in the sense that, yeah, the movie was what it was. It was to scare you. If you're looking for a good movie about something like that, The Exorcism of Emily Rose is a very good movie if you're interested in that. The movie is about a priest, where an exorcist, a Catholic priest, where an exorcist went bad and a young girl died. And so he was being prosecuted for murder because of the exorcism that went bad. And there was an atheist, non-believing lawyer. She was a woman. And there was a devout Christian lawyer who was representing. And in the end, you would have thought that the Christian would have understood the idea of a demon possession, but he didn't. And he thought it was all a hoax. And the whole thing turned around to where the person, the non-believing lawyer, became a believing person. It's a very, I thought it was a very good movie. If you're really interested in, look it up. Other than that, I don't follow those type of movies too much. They kind of scare me, and I don't particularly care to watch them. Some moderately, okay, but I don't get too involved in it. They're a little too real for me, and I just don't care to watch them. I do know a little bit about, I have listened to various different commentaries about it, people who are into demonology and what have you. The realm, I think, is real. We don't like to talk about it today in our moderns. We think we're above all that. That's not going to happen, but it still happens. And I will give an example, a little bit of an example of how science does allow for the variations and the anomalies that happen within science. I have a course company, the Great Courses. Anybody knows me, I have tons of these. There are some of the best professors in colleges, and they give courses, and I've educated myself over the years in various different ways. And this course here happens to be called Redefining Reality and the Intellectual Implications of Modern Science. It's a very good, most of these are very easy to understand, even if you don't know the subject matter. They're a little pricey sometimes. Bob knows about them. There's a few people here who know about them. Shane knows about them. They're very good. If you do a lot of traveling like me, they occupy a lot of your time, really, and get your head thinking in a lot of different things. They're very worthwhile. Anyway, he talks about how various different scientists along the way, physicists, have understood the world around us. And in about the beginning of the 19th century, Pierre Simon Laplace was supposedly a mathematical genius, and he did a lot of study on the probabilities of such as gambling and what have you with numbers, and how he was looking for patterns and various different things and how things would come out. And he came up with the idea that it was capable of understanding the whole universe and through mathematics and what have you. And that everything had a pattern, and the universe was deterministic. This is where modern science has kind of left us along the way. We think that everything is deterministic. Everything can be proven. Otherwise, through the use of reason and logic, otherwise we throw it out. So we've come to the point in our subject matter today, demon and spirit, impure spirits. We tend to throw that out because it's not necessarily a scientific provable thing. But the science that does allow for the abnormalities, abnormalities or the anomalies. That's the word I was looking for. My tongue gets a little twisted every now and then, and I have to refer to my notes. Anyway, everything was okay until mathematics and Euclid had figured everything out. The world was wonderful. Wow. Excuse me. Until quantum physics came along. Quantum mechanics changed setting of everything. It allowed for what is called the chaos theory. Even though they have determined that within the chaos theory there is patterns, but there is they allow for anomalies to happen. Now, an example that I want to give of an anomaly is this. Most of us will flip a coin, right? And most of the time it goes either heads or tails. That's pretty much predetermined all the time. Heads or tails, heads or tails. So say 90% of the time, or 99.9% of the time, it's going to be heads or tails. But what happens if at one time it lands standing up and it's spinning? What is it now? It's an anomaly. The only way you're going to know is if you step on it. And then you have to look. What happens if it stops standing up? What is it then? That's an example of that was given in the course book about an anomaly. It's most of the time, 99.9 of the time, it's going one or the other. But the problem is it doesn't always do that. Science allows for this to happen. And within this range, I say that's where the demonic world lives. It is a possibility, a reality, an anomaly, but yet it exists. It doesn't necessarily have rhyme or reason in our world, but yet it still exists. There's another thing, I'll get to it in a minute, but I want to give it an example of an everyday life thing. Dick asked me how my week went this week. And I said to him, okay, yeah, but okay. The story of my trip this week was that I have a van and a flatbed, and this week I drove my van, hauled my van, and I hauled military stuff down to Oklahoma, which I have done many times, down and back, boom, no problem, right? That's the normal trip, down and back. Well, this trip, it didn't quite happen that way. I got down to Big Cabin, Oklahoma, for an unknown reason, I said to check my oil. So I tilted my hood and down a little bit, so I put a little bit in, and I got to looking around, and I seen this wet streak in the back of my motor, and a little puddle in the back of the bell housing. I said, that's not right. So I took my hand in it. It was diesel fuel. Then I knew I had a problem, or certainly a possibility of a serious problem. And I'm thinking, okay, what do I do? Big Cabin, I'm in the middle of nowhere. There's nothing. Everything's closed for the night. What am I going to do? So it was a high-pressure fuel line that probably has over 3,000 pounds of pressure in it at any given time. And it was oozing just a little bit. It hadn't spurt. Because if it spurt, I would have had a problem. So I took a little piece of hose that I had on my water pump inside my cab that pumps out from my sink, a little line about like that. I cut a little piece of it off. I cut it in half, took a hose clamp, and tightened that thing down. And the first attempt was it still oozed out the side a little bit. I moved it over and tightened it up a little bit more, and it quit. I drove it the whole way down and back. I still want it now. I have to fix it. I'm not working next week. I'll be fixing it. So, wherein lies the miracle? Wherein lies the anomaly? Was it that I paid attention at all? That was a miracle in itself, that I paid attention and said, ooh, I got to check my oil, and in the process of everything, these things happen in our daily lives all the time. There is chaos attached to our lives all the time to some degree. We don't think it has a pattern, but it does. That's what science says. But that's not the end of the story. I went on down and delivered it, and I had everything figured out, right? I had a load coming back on to Ephrata. No problem. Boom, boom, boom. Okay, my problem's over, right? I get down and get unloaded. I start back up through. They call me and say, load canceled. I said, okay, now what am I going to do? I didn't drive more than about 20 miles before I got to Muskogee. And they said, they have a load at Tulsa, loads right now, pays more money, delivers Saturday. Over I went, up the road I went, got my part, even though I didn't have to drive out of my way to get my part. I had the replacement hose in case it got bad and I really had to fix it. So wherein lies what is normal and what is chaotic? There is an example in our daily lives in which things happen, in which we expect them to happen, and it normally does, but every one of us knows along our way things happened. Things become chaotic. My chaos intermingles with your chaos, and we sometimes think that that's all there is. I was listening to the news the other night, and that's all I heard.
Sometimes chaos is normal.
Yeah. Chaos everywhere. Storms, this, that. That's all I heard was chaos. I said to Colin, there's no good news. There was one little snippet at the end. We tend to hear, that's the part we hear, the chaotic stuff. But life has a lot of normal. 90% of our lives is normal. I said to Colin, what am I going to remember about my trip? It was a wonderful trip. I had a nice, relaxing trip. Boom. I mean, it was good. I'm not going to remember that part. I'm going to remember my fuel line broke and my load got canceled. That's what I'm going to remember. The rest of it will all be fade off in the distance. That's what we remember. We tend to think our lives as being chaotic and upside down. Science says even in that there is a pattern, which is hard to believe, but there seems to be. Another abnormality in which are an anomaly within science that I want to relate to you is called the Koch snowflake, K-O-C-H. Has anybody ever heard of it?
Yeah.
I didn't either until a while ago when I learned. That's the beauty of learning. It's the, most times we think of that it is impossible for an infinite to live in a finite space. The Coach Snowflake is an anomaly in which you can take the Star of David. It's a step to get to that part, but it ends up at the Star of David. And then within that, you can have an infinite triangle, little triangles, and you can develop space. It's infinite. It spirals infinite. Most times you think as a circle, the more you get it bigger, that's the only way you can have an infinite. So, but within that defined space, you can have an infinite reality or an infinite space. Them are two of the examples that I'm going to use today. There are more. I find them fascinating. Absolutely just fascinating that things like this upset the normal. And in the spiritual realm, that's what happens. It upsets our normal reality. It doesn't fit into our mold, our scientific proven mold. Even though most of what we do works out. This reality, science says, lives between, if I can find it here real quick, the approximate and the real solution. Most of us think that science is a proven art, that it proves it. But science is only based on probabilities, high probabilities. Most of it is that it will happen this way 99.9% of the time, therefore we say it happens. Murphy's Law, we understand that, right? If something goes wrong, if something can go wrong, it will go wrong. That's kind of what this all is about. We simplified it down to that part. There is a gap between the approximate and the actual. And therein lies chaos. I find it utterly fascinating. And to me, for those who are of the scientific mind, I think you need to move your walls out a little bit more. Then there's a lot more to reasoning and logic in the reality in the world in which we live. What does this have to do with demons and unclean spirits? All I'm trying to do, I'm not going to develop all the different types of demons and all this kind of stuff. I'm not going to spend time on that because to me it's too, most people are not interested in it in any way. But there is a whole field in which people have developed knowledge of demons and named them differently. The Catholic Church is really involved and still involved in it today in exorcisms. They claim that they are going up and rather than down. But the Bible distinguishes between an unclean spirit and a demon. In this text here, both is used, unclean and demon. The unclean spirit, which traditional Christianity does not quite accept, is a disembodied spirit that didn't go quite the whole way across. Traditional Christianity says that when you die, you either go to heaven or hell. It doesn't want to allow for a purgatory-type space. That's a Catholic term. I'm going to use it. But the space between heaven and this reality. But an unclean spirit, according to some biblical scholars, is just that. A disembodied spirit that didn't quite make it across. And they can be either good or evil. So when Jesus is talking about taking an unclean spirit out of an individual, which us moderns, we don't want to talk about that either. We think we go take a pill and we hope that it'll do everything. And we're into pharmaceuticals. That's what we want. But the reality of it is, I believe there is unclean spirits and there is demons who will influence us and do walk and, well, they don't walk, but they are in this world and can influence. The way I understand demons is they have to have a body, they have to have a host. In other words, they can't talk on their own, they have to have a host. And so when Jesus cast them out and it shrieked on the way out because it lost its voice. It can't speak no more. It has to have a host in order for it to talk. And that happens to be humans. If you do, I have done a lot of study. I don't claim to know everything, no stretch of the imagination, because it's not my favorite subject. But I do not laugh about it at all. I understand that in the speaking of tongues within charismatic movements, and this is where I'm very, very concerned about unclean spirits speaking, or clean spirits, or whatever you want to call them, speaking through humans. We scoff at that, but that, I believe, happens and has been happening ever since mankind has been around. Most indigenous peoples have had this in their religion ever since. It's always been there. We, as a white Christian evangelicals, and when we went out and proselytized into different countries, have destroyed that part and that of the indigenous people. From the African Americans to South America to the Native Americans, we have destroyed it. We said, don't think that way, think this way. I think we have been in error. We should have built upon that rather than destroying that. And there has been various missionaries over the years who have done that, exactly that. And I read a book years ago about a missionary that went over to India and did just that. They used the native culture and put Christianity in it, and he was very, very successful. And I think that's what we should have done. But we didn't do that. The problem still exists today. We still struggle to try to kill off the indigenous thinking. There was an article, I just got it the other day, Christianity Today. It's a magazine, a periodical that I get. And it's about the Catholic Church that went down into Peru and started proselytizing many years ago. And as the problems had in the countryside with terrorism, more and more of the traditional people are coming into the cities, and the Catholic faith and the indigenous faith are clashing. And they are struggling to try to work together. Yes, they have over the years influenced the Catholic religion with their many gods, and they have changed it somewhat, but they are in a struggle even today at this very time. And as the people from the countryside are moving in, it particularly talks about Lima, and the old traditional customs bump up against, and they're saying that their faith may have to yield, for better or for worse, to the new Reformation. I think it's kind of sad to see some of our indigenous people's faith and thinking to be thrown aside. I believe that humanity is on a time scale. The Bible is on a linear line to some degree. It started here and it wants to end up there. And there's many things along the way. And humanity has changed along the way. I'm going to close with a more of a laughable joke, because my message was rather serious today. One point that I want to make is, just don't close the door to the unknown. Don't be so narrow-minded that your ears rub together. Be open-minded enough to say, if you don't understand something, simply set it aside. Don't logically destroy it. Allow it simply to sit there. Start a new category, as I said a couple Sundays ago. Mystery. Put it there. You'll be surprised that the more things you put over there, The more pieces of it, like a jigsaw puzzle, the more you put over there, sooner or later it's going to be, as science says, there's going to be a pattern arise. There's going to be bits and pieces that fit together, and suddenly you'll take it out of mystery to understanding. You'll be amazed rather than destroy it. I'm going to close with my funny joke. I usually start with it, but I'm going to close it today so we can laugh a little bit. One day a man spotted a genie lamp or a lamp alongside the roadside. So he picked it up and he rubbed it vigorously and a genie appeared. "I'll grant you your fondest wish," the genie said. The man thought for a moment, thought, and then he said, "I want a spectacular job, a job that no man has ever succeeded at and has even attempted to do, or has ever attempted to do." Poof, the genie went, "You're a housewife."
We have come to the time of the service where we take our offering. For those of you who are visiting, please feel under no obligation to participate. This service is our gift to you. blessing of this in all our days, we thank you, gracious God. Accept, we pray, not just this money, but also our lives freely offered in gratitude for all you have done for us. Use them both in this place and wherever you might take us. Amen.